to the second companion episode for the Borrowed Time podcast. This is where I kind of get beyond the written word, as it were, and just kind of vamp for a few minutes and tell you about what was going on in my head and share some bits of information. I think I left a couple things out that I wanted to cover last time. So I think I'm going to go back and cover those now. And if I did cover them last time, then it'll be a bit of a repeat. And I apologize for that. But when I was listening to the companion episode, I thought, I forgot to say this and I forgot to say that. So I'm going to try to cover those now. There will be spoilers in this. This is for following story episode number 7. So I'm going to mainly be covering topics that are happening in episodes 6 and 7. So if you haven't caught up that far, probably want to press pause now, because don't want you to be spoiled for the story. So first of all, the setting for Borrowed Time. And this is the thing I think I forgot to mention last time. Borrowed Time takes place in the northern suburbs of Detroit, which is where I live. I don't specifically live in the suburbs mentioned, being Troy and Royal Oak, but I live not too far from them. So those are real places. Most of the things that are in here are the places that are in here are real places. There'll be some locales coming up, places I've hung out in that are real. The mall that's here, that's in episode 6, is actually a fictional mall. Where I envision this mall being, there's actually a real mall. It's called Oakland Mall. It's in Madison Heights. But I kind of invented my own mall in my head as far as the layout was concerned, because I wanted a specific layout. I wanted that hallway, and I didn't think that hallway existed in Oakland Mall, so I created Madison Mall, which should have that hallway in it that that Ness uses to escape Thing 1. But for the most part, the things that you'll see in the story over the course of time are real and exist in this area someplace. Episode 6 was all about Ness getting to the mall and doing a little clothes shopping and then trying to get out of the mall, getting away from Thing 1. And part of the way he does this is by using the machine, using the device, jump in time in the middle of a jump, so that when Thing 1 shows up, he reappears, having jumped forward, and actually jumps onto the back of Thing 1 and knocks him down and makes his head thud once again on the hard concrete floor. Thing 1 is going to he's having a bad day. He's having a bad day. We also learned that Thing 1, Thing 2, Thing 3 actually have names. They are Mays, Williams, and Harrison in that order. And those are actually named after people I follow on Twitter. Originally, I had it written where it was Glenn that was naming them after the Dr. Seuss characters. And my editor and wife pointed out rather correctly, I think, that that was a bit whimsical for Glenn. You know, why should Glenn be this total, you know, hard case, except when it comes to dealing with his goons, and then he's going to start naming them after children's story characters, you know. So it made more sense to have that be Ness. So I switched that over to Ness, but then Glenn had to call him something besides, you know, hey, you. So I was racking my brains for names, and I was sitting there at Twitter, at my computer, playing around on Twitter, and these three people were some of the people I've been talking to a lot that day. I said, okay, going to make this easy. So I got to throw that in. Kind of a little homage to some of my favorite Twitter peeps, so that was kind of fun. So we end episode 6, and Ness is getting away. He's made it to a relatively safe place in a hotel, well, motel, a seedy, seedy place. And the seedy place is kind of a conglomeration of a couple things. Number one, yeah, the hotel with the word, or the motel with the word motel spelled out in green shingles, that exists right across the street from where I work. And it's, you know, black shingles, but in green shingles it says motel. So I guess if you're in a plane flying overhead and looking for a motel, you can kind of get it done. It looks like a nicer place than I described, though. There are some places, if you go down by the edge of Detroit or into Detroit, there are some hotels that look like how this one is described. I actually used to work on the 8 Mile Road, which is a border between Detroit and the suburbs. And there were several interesting hotels down there for the local working class, if you get my meaning. And so that was kind of, I kind of took the outside of the one I have near my workplace and merged that with kind of the typical motel you'd see down on 8 Mile Road. And that's what you came up with there. And the mall he's supposed to be there, if you want to follow along at home on the map, is for the second mall where he changes his clothes. That's supposed to be Northland Mall. Nothing you really great to report there. It's just that it happens to be near Detroit. It's getting down closer to that area, and it's in a little bit more rundown area of the metropolitan area here. And then we have, in episode 7, Nessa's going to go back in time, back to 1987, and he's looking for some place to jump from. He chose the Detroit Public Library. I actually took a day trip one day down there because I was thinking, because I basically did the same thought process. And I thought, oh, where can he jump from? I thought, where's some place that's old? How about a library? All of the suburban libraries around here are pretty new structures. Very nice, very new. But, you know, the problem is when you're trying to jump back 20 years, you don't want to be standing in a building that's only 5 years old because you might end up reappearing in a tree or something. So I had to find something old. Did a little research online, discovered the age of the Detroit Public Library. I thought, well, that sounds like a plan. So I actually went down there one day. It's a nice building. I tried to bring that out in the text, but it's really well maintained. I mean, it's obviously been around for a while, and it's all marble construction. It's very pretty. And then you get over into the new section, and you got the paneling, and you got the metal letters, and it's like, you know, it's the 60s, man. That's when we added this. I kind of doped that out and then found the dedication plaque and saw it was 60-something when they added that section. But the older section is just beautiful, and it's well-maintained. It you know, doesn't smell of old age and mildew and whatever like a lot of buildings do. I mentioned that mural called Man's Mobility, and that's a truly stunning piece of art that stands about, I don't know, 20 feet tall, and is in 3 panels, and it's pretty nice. And there are lots of neat little things. I mentioned the conference room with the black doors, gilded in gold. Those were there, and there was a little room that was made to look like a studio, radio studio, that was a tribute to Ernie Harwell, very famous Detroit Tigers baseball announcer. So some of the highlights that I mentioned there. So, but that was kind of a fun place. But like the story says, you walked into the bathroom and it was like going back in time at least 20 years. And so it was kind of funny. So I knew that was a place. So that's why Ness spent a lot of his time in bathrooms. Just because it seems to be the last place that places renovate. So it's good for, you know, here's a tip for you. If you ever get a time machine where you're not in a car having to go 88 miles an hour, the bathroom makes a great jumping off point. It's private, you know, probably hasn't been touched in a while. And if your time traveling mechanism makes you want to puke, you got a toilet right there. What could be better? So then he goes, he's in 1987, and he's going to Western Michigan University. And I did go to Western for a little bit. I was getting some additional classes at one point in my life, and I lived in the Kalamazoo area, and so I took some classes at Western. And while the places that are mentioned in here are not really places I frequented all that much. In fact, I think the only time I've been in the field house twice. I was in there for registration. And then I was in there to see somebody graduate, somebody that was not me. It is a massive place. And it has a track in it and it has all sorts of things. I'm not really sure if it has tennis courts. I kind of made that up. I'm hoping it does. It's big enough to have tennis courts. But I just, it struck me as a neat place. And I thought that would be a great place to have Ness and Angie meet. And kind of the whole Ness and Angie riff, you know, it's just that I really sucked at girls. It's amazing I got married, but I just really sucked at talking to girls and all that when I was doing that back when I was single. So I kind of wanted to bring that out in Ness a little bit, that, yeah, he kind of sucked, or he could in the right situation. If he cared enough about the person, then he could suck too. And then finally, he makes it there. He gets to the physics building, and he's going to talk to Dr. Bertrand, but he runs into his younger self. And as I mentioned last time, this is just, I like the talking to yourself kind of thing. This is rather short because his younger self is so wrapped up in his own little college student angst, he doesn't really notice that, you know, hey, there's my 40-some-odd-year-old self standing right in front of me. And with the typical college student, you know, mentality, anybody over 20 is old anyway. So I figured an oblivious college student who was already in turmoil probably wouldn't notice that his double was standing right in front of him. Because, you know, who's expecting that? You open a door and there's some guy standing there. Are you really expecting it to be you from 20 years in the future? Well, I am, but, you know, probably not too many other people. But I wanted to show the difference. I wanted to show Dr. Bertrand younger. You know, and yes, I know the voice really doesn't sound that different between old Dr. Bertrand, young Dr. Bertrand, and that's because I'm just not that good a voice actor. But hopefully you kind of get the sense that he's a lot more vibrant. There's a lot more energy to the man in 1987 than there is in 2008. He's obviously, his body hasn't started to rebel, and he's just totally geeked by seeing Ness. I just thought that was a nice, kind of a nice way to go back to when the friendship was fresh between the two of them, and give a glimpse into kind of the doctor in his prime. But even Dr. Bertrand is a little worried about polluting the timeline. So he's like, don't tell the doppelganger too much. Keep him kind of in the dark because he doesn't need to know. You know, he doesn't need to know that he's going to invent the flux capacitor in 20 years. So that's really the commentary I have on those episodes. I'm going to run a quick promo here, and then we're going to get into feedback.
Nights, Nights, a vampire novel, read by author Emery and Rich. Malcolm O'Leary is a simple Irish immigrant striving for the American dream in 1860 when coach robbers cause his untimely death.
Stop your coach or die!
Hey, this ain't no regular driver. It's the one that put us in jail a month ago.
I saw God, and he was a woman.
Severina Santos is an exotic beauty from the jungles of Brazil, whose family is brutally murdered by the same man she later calls lover.
Ah! Fantasma! Fantasma! Sabrina! Fantasma!
Who are you?
A friend.
A friend who kills my family?
They are nothing. You are beautiful.
You are from hell!
Julian Titan is a knight who serves as guardian angel to his family, but has no clue about his predestined fate.
Master, come quickly. Your mother is ill.
Lead me to her.
Go now, my son. I must be alone.
I mourn my mother's passing. Felt it most acutely.
Good God, son. You've aged 20 years in a night.
Yes, father. And you have not.
Now they are on a quest to create the perfect offspring. But who is in the shadows, altering their plan as they strive for perfection? Will a powerful mortal named Jesper be the one to save them all? Find out at vamp.podshow.com with music by Green Druid.
Okay, so next I wanted to do a little feedback. I have gotten a little, not a lot. and I'd always love to get more. So I'll tell you how to do that in a bit. I've gotten a lot of nice comments from feedback. I got a lot of likes. You know, you can like something in Facebook, and so I'll post what's going on, and I'll get a lot of likes on it. So that's really cool. I got a comment from my friend Gary Goodman, who was saying that he was really enjoying the story and keep recording, and I have been. In fact, I recorded the last chapter yesterday, and I just got to get that into edited and put into an actual episode, but that's coming. It's coming along. I also had an email from Patrick Lewis, who, after listening to the first two episodes, I'll just read his email. He says, "Hey, I just listened to the first two episodes, Officers Lowell and Ballantyne, eh?" And gives me a smiley face. Yeah, he's commenting on the fact that I actually put a couple nods to some of my favorite podcast authors. Officers Lowell and Ballantyne refer to Nathan Lowell, who has written some of the novels I listen to the most on podiobooks.com, and that is the Ishmael Wong series, Quarter Share, Half Share, Full Share, Double Share. It's about this young adult, 18-year-old, mother dies, and he's got to make his way in the world in space, so he ends up becoming a spacer on a merchant ship that is flying from star to star doing trade. And it's just great stuff. It's just a fun story. I just love it when I can get into that world. I just listened to it for the nth time not too long ago. It's great stuff. And then Officer Ballantyne was for Pitt Ballantyne, who's from New Zealand and has an awesome voice. I just love listening to her. She's got a couple things out. Chasing the Bard is out in its entirety, and that is a story of the fae and magic wrapped around the life of William Shakespeare, and that's really good. And then she's got Weather Child that's out right now, that she's releasing right now. That's a really cool story that's happening in New Zealand after World War II and after World War I, before World War II. And it's got magic and all sorts of strange things happening as well. So that's a really cool story. There was also, in one of the past episodes, it might have been episode 3, there's Deputy Lafferty. And that is a nod to Mighty Mer Lafferty, another one of my favorite podcasters, who's got just a whole host of patio books out there. If you go to patiobooks.com and search for Mer Lafferty, you'll see there's 6 or 7 books she has out there, and I enjoy her stuff quite a bit as well. So I had to throw some nods in. Patrick also left a review on patiobooks.com, and it was very nice. He said, "This is a strong start after 6 episodes to an interesting book. Keith Hughes resists making time travel terribly powerful, making this more of a puzzle thriller than a hard sci-fi physics exercise. With interesting characters and a deepening mystery, this is well worth a look." And then he mentions he's glad we got our feed jitters worked out and that he's looking forward to future episodes. Yeah, we had some feed jitters at the beginning, but those are all fixed. So thank you, Patrick, for both the email and the review on Podiobooks. I appreciate that a lot. I got another email from Sess, who said, "Just listen to the first part of the story. It is pretty cool. I don't usually listen to audiobooks, but I thought this was well done, and it kept me interested. So thank you for that. I'm glad you're enjoying it." And then lastly, I got my first iTunes review from ComToad. He says, "I've listened to the first 4 episodes so far, and I've thoroughly enjoyed every minute of it. I like how Keith describes the scenes and interjects humor in just the right places. I am not looking forward to tomorrow when I finish the last available episode and have to wait for the next one. If you like time travel stories, give this one a try." So thank you very much, ComToad, for that. That's very much appreciated. Anytime you can leave a review, I would appreciate it. It just helps maybe give somebody new that incentive to give Borrowed Time a try. If you want to leave me some feedback, which would be fantastic, you have a number of ways to do it. You can leave a comment on the penslinger.com website. You can become part of the Borrowed Time fan group over on Facebook and leave a comment there. Currently, I have 36 fans in that group, so that's growing pretty well, actually. It's coming along. But you can join that, and you can comment on there. You can leave me a voicemail on my voicemail number, which is 206-309-9171. So if you'd like to hear your voice instead of mine, right here, your voice here, leave me a voicemail. I'll play it on the next companion episode. You can email me at khughes@penslinger.com, or you can follow my secret web alias, Ed Gizmo, on Twitter. And if you didn't have time to write all that down, just go to penslinger.com. There's links to all of that right there. Below the subscription boxes, there's a contact me box, and you've got all of those things available to you. So I think I'm going to wrap this up. I'm probably going long. Just want to thank you for listening. Look forward to sharing the rest of Borrowed Time with you. So until next time, be seeing you.